All right, welcome to Highly Questionable. We got Dominique Foxworth on one side. On the other, we have Mina Kimes, who is far too attached to the Seattle Seahawks to be doing a show with us today.
Does Blake Griffin make Mina's Nets better?
Man, the Pistons in the last few years have had some amazing moments in buyout history. Remember they had to give Josh Smith all that money to go away? And now Blake Griffin got $64 million, I believe it was, to leave the Pistons, and he is now signed with the Brooklyn Nets. Maybe this helps the Nets. I really don't know if it helps the Nets. I do know this, and I think that people need to understand this. This season, Blake Griffin has stunk. Like, this is not just simply being he's not the Blake Griffin that you don't remember. Yeah. It goes beyond the fact that he hasn't dunked a basketball in an NBA game since 2019. He shot 36% from the floor and under 30% from three. He's never been particularly good at defense. This could be heartbreaking to watch him with the Nets. Maybe you come up with a way that he could be helpful. I have no idea. But if this team needs somebody to help them play defense, Blake Griffin couldn't do that for you in 2014. I don't know what the hell he going to do for you right now.
Oh, man. Welcome back, Blake.
Oh, I'm going to try to present an optimist case, yeah. But it's going to be hard because Bamane is mostly right. Like, I saw the reaction to this last night, and it reminded me a little bit of when Boogie Cousins signed with the Warriors, and everyone was like, whoa, monsters, like, yeah, did we forget what year it was? Because if it was 2014 or 2015, this would be a massive signing. But in the year 2021, not only is Blake not done, he's blocked like two shots, and he ranks in the bottom quartile of the NBA in defense near the basket, which is a problem for Brooklyn because the only weakness this team has is rim protection. So do I think it's going to make a massive change for them? No. Do I think it maybe gives them a little bit of depth in the front court? Maybe.
So let's be clear. You started that by saying, I'm going to give the optimist case, and it ended just as depressing as Bomani's is. So like there, let's be honest, like there is no optimist case. So the argument that I would make if I was Blake Griffin's representative and saying like Blake is going to be good for them is that Blake, we're not going to ask very much of him. And he might still have, like, he's not going to start. He's not going to be the sixth man. Mm-hmm. He's going to come off the bench in certain situations, maybe in key moments, to offer something different, something unique against the backups of their opponents. Maybe in a playoff, something like that. Like, that is the argument, is that Blake, despite his knee surgeries, but that Blake could capture lightning in the bottle, go back to old school Blake for, like, 2 minutes and 30 seconds a game. Like, that is the best case scenario of this situation, is that we can get him out there and he might get a couple points, maybe get a steal, still be more athletic than assuming like a backup center might be. And that is the value that he brings to the team. That is the most possible optimism I can like ascribe to this situation.
I gotta say, though, I think that this has been, like, great for Blake Griffin, though, right? Like, he upgraded from Detroit, brought himself to New York. That's a win. And nobody is ready for them to start letting fans into places more than Blake, because he's going to be at these clubs doing that stand-up. Like, it's, as far as this goes in terms of getting himself ready for what the next level of the game is, I was like, either go back to L.A. or New York, but he's going to be in them clubs. And guess what? Nobody will be mad at him if he does, right? Okay. I just can't see what he's supposed to give you on a basketball court. I also want to note that I noticed this, that Mina's Nets fandom seems to dwindle when she is away from bad influences. Like, when you're up here with Pablo, you're the super Nets fan. You come up here to talk about it, you just kind of like, oh, yeah, the Nets. Let's talk about basketball.
You know what? Okay. I'm going to both answer that and go back and actually make the optimist case, which is that the Nets have a way of turning everyone who joins the team into better versions of themselves. Blake's former teammate, Bruce Brown, surrounded by superstars, has become a valuable role player. James Harden not only shed a ton of weight mysteriously upon joining the Nets, but became this assist machine. And I, Mina Kimes, after joining the Nets, became the NBA's most beloved superfan.
That's all you got, huh?
That is all I have.
Are you surprised that the Eagles are building around Jalen Hurts?
Okay, Chris Mortensen has reported this, that owner Jeffrey Lurie of the Philadelphia Eagles has told the staff that this year we need to try to figure out how to make this thing work with Jalen Hurts, which is interesting because you would have thought that maybe, just maybe, they try to move up in the draft and get one of the four quarterbacks who are at the top of it. Nope, they say they want to build around Jalen Hurts. And it is surprising, but on another level, It's really not. It's easy to forget. If a team takes a quarterback in the second round, the plan is for that dude to play. Like, they think that if they take you in the second round, that this is a player that can be an NFL starter. Not necessarily a star, but absolutely somebody who would be your starting quarterback. He's there. He completed 52% of his passes last year. That's not very good, but he was also a rookie with a full offseason of him being the guy. It kind of makes sense to see if what they have is something that they can build around. I don't think what they have is something that they can build around, but I don't think it's a bad idea to give it a check.
Yeah, I think that I agree with half of this. Like, I agree they should not be drafting a quarterback. I'm not sure that I agree that Jalen Hurts is the long-term answer. Like, if you think about the success that they had, it was because that team was loaded on the offensive and defensive line when they won that Super Bowl. They went through that run without their quarterback that they drafted. You need to build a team up before you can bring a quarterback in that's going to succeed. Yeah. That's what we've seen in recent history be successful. While we do give all the credit to the quarterbacks that succeed, it's so rare that you drop a quarterback into a broken situation or a deteriorating team, and then he saves them and bounces them back up to the top of the league. This is a smart move because they have to rebuild their structure, not because they believe in Jalen Hurts, because I'm pretty sure I don't. I didn't before the draft last year and what he did last season. Like, it gave me a little bit of confidence, but I'm not ready to sell a farm and lean in and say we're in win now territory in Philadelphia.
And I don't think Philadelphia is either, Dominique, which is why they came out and did this, because they looked at their squad, they saw all the holes on their roster, the negative cap space, and then realized we don't really have any other options. I mean, sure, like what Mike said, they could have traded up for a quarterback, but given how competitive that part of the draft is, I imagine they thought it wasn't realistic. So they're going to go into this season with the team they have and give Jalen Hurts a shot. I think we're going to learn a lot actually during the draft, because with that number six pick, they have the option of either trading down or taking a wide receiver like Ja'Marr Chase, which would, of course, be giving Jalen Hurts an actual shot to succeed. If they don't do that, then we know he's probably being set up for failure this year, and it's a full rebuilding year, not for Jalen Hurts, but for the rest of the Eagles roster.
First of all, I had forgotten just how sorry they were last year, because you said they have the number six pick already. I'm in here talking about trading up, because I had forgotten that they were already like right in the thick of the get a quarterback part of the draft. Damn. The other part, how much of a backhanded compliment is it if they come tell you, Jalen Hurts, we are going to build this season around you because we are too sorry to look for something better.
Is it significant that the Bears are making a run at Mina's formerly beloved Russell Wilson?
The Bears making a run to get Russell Wilson, quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks, to whom Mina Kimes has pledged allegiance. Now, is it significant that the Bears are going to make a significant run? All right, and this report comes from Brian Biggs of the Chicago Tribune. I mean, yeah, I guess so, right? Like, it makes sense. There's no reason for them not to try to make a run. I don't know what they have to give that could actually entice Seattle to actually make the trade unless they go put Khalil Mack in the package. But yeah, go ahead, make the run. Try your best, Chicago Bears. Because the one thing the Bears, and maybe the biggest mistake they've made over this post-Sid Luckman era, is anytime they get a quarterback with half a pulse, the first thing you say is, but hey, he's the best quarterback that we've had in 60 or 70 years, right? And that has led them to think, hey, Jay Cutler can work. Why? Because everybody else has been sorry. Mitch Trubisky, why? Because everybody else has been sorry. They're only comparing them to the previous sorriness of the franchise. Russell Wilson is going to go into the Hall of Fame when he retires. So good for them for actually stepping their ambitions up after they passed on Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson so that they could draft the dude who had started for one season and the people that watched him the most couldn't understand why the hell you was doing that.
Here's why this is not significant in my opinion, my unbiased opinion. If Russell Wilson's frustration with Seattle is that he doesn't like the offense, that he's not well protected, and he doesn't have playmakers, why the hell would he want to go to Chicago? That'd be like John Lennon leaving the Beatles to join the Monkees. Every Bears fan in my life is confused about this rumor. And as Bomani meticulously laid out, what do they have to offer Seattle? They don't have a pick that they can turn into a quarterback, and they sure as heck don't have a quarterback either. And I know that in seconds, Dominique is about to mock me for being a homer and being defensive and being irrational, but you have to admit, this makes no sense.
Oh, no, I'm not mocking you at all. I agree. I would have said that it makes no sense if it wasn't for the fact that I was on television this morning with one Adam Schefter, not a darn Schefter, the one and only Adam Schefter. And the one and only Adam Schefter said, Not only does he believe that Russell is being serious about potentially going elsewhere, but he believes that there are people in the Seahawks organization who would like to make that move. That blew my mind this morning, because prior to that, I would say it's outrageous. It'll never happen. But if Adam Schefter says that there are people in the organization who are entertaining this or who would like to entertain it, it becomes real to me all of a sudden. And the other point I would make, while you say Chicago, terrible, blah, 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 I understand that. All those points are accurate. But you look at Russell and you see that Russell was on track to take over this league, to be the face of the league after Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and that old guard passes on. But he does not get that opportunity, because we skip right over him to Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott. Like, it's their league now. And I think that he looks at Nagy and sees someone potentially who's connected to Andy Reid, and he believes that this might be his opportunity to become the face of the league that we all thought he would be.
Dominique Foxworth.
Mina Collins.
I understand we spend half of our time at ESPN talking about Deshaun Watson and Dak Prescott, but I challenge you to walk outside your house, go onto the street, put on a mask first, and find one human being who thinks Dak Prescott, not Russell Wilson, is like the face of the NFL, who thinks that he's better than Russell Wilson.
I like what you did there. That was nice. That was nice what you did there. You left one important name out, Mina Kimes. You left one name out.
You know what? Watson, too. And by the way.
No, not him. Patrick. Patrick.
Oh,
it's Patrick's league. So that's the person that he's looking at. That's the man he's looking at and thinking, I'm better than him. Given the right situation, I could perform like him. Given the right situation, people would be talking about me like that. If I didn't have an offense or a head coach who believed that running the ball in defense was the answer, I could be that guy. That is the reason why he might look at the Bears and think, I can go there. They'll do what I want. The coaches will do what I want. They'll get the players I want. Having control seems attractive.
Hold on. Hold on. This is the biggest thing. And this is the thing I think that we've learned through all this with Seattle. The bottom line is Russell Wilson thinks he's better than the Seahawks organization thinks that Russell Wilson is. Sure. Sometimes the most attractive thing that you can go to is some people who think you're as good as you think you are.
His issue is with the way that Seattle is running an organization. You can go to Chicago, and yes, maybe they don't have the best offensive line or the best receiving options right now, but they can offer something to him that the Seahawks seem to not be willing to offer. Some control.
I mean, I could leave Highly Questionable and put on my own YouTube show every day and have complete control, and Lenny would be my co-star, but it would be terrible.
Jesus. So now the Bears are Mina and a dog on YouTube, compared to the Seahawks being this great show.
I'm here to tell you, she's got a point.
Up next on HQ.
Here's what I know about this. Dominique Foxworth, cover cornerback, was not ever putting himself in a position to have his teeth knocked out, not even in no football game. And he thinks this dude's supposed to do it in a dunk contest.
Hey. Selfish. A, you're absolutely wrong. I can show you plenty of bad decisions that I made through the course of my career, because I was not Dominique Foxworth first round draft pick cover corner. I was Dominique Foxworth. We need to make this roster.
Do you question if Playoff P deserves credit for changing his mind about Damian Lillard's shot selection?
All right, I want to start by giving a shout out to Anthony Simons, because some of you guys think he should have knocked out all his front teeth just to impress you guys with a slam dunk. The hell is wrong with you? Anyway, we got the homie Playoff P. You may remember when Damian Lillard hit this three ball right here to put Oklahoma City out of the playoffs. It was quite a dagger from quite a long ways away.
I mean, that's a bad shot. care what anybody says. That's a bad shot. But hey, he made it. That story won't be told. It was a bad shot.
Salty. Even Russell Westbrook is like, I don't know if this is the right approach. Anyway, here's from the All-Star game last night, which was interestingly entertaining, even though it was a blowout. Dame Lillard from behind half court. And then there. Dudes in the three-point contest weren't able to hit ones from like 15 feet in from that. Look at that. Now, here is Paul George after the game.
Well, I guess I was criticized for the right reason, for calling Dame's shot in the playoffs a bad shot. I mean, I see these guys' range is crazy. You know, the ability to knock those shots down. And, I mean, like you said, it's not like it's a half-court heave. Like, you know, these are shots that are in there. you know, it's well in their range.
So, did you say that's no longer a bad shot?
It's a great shot. Two thumbs up.
I gotta say, man, y'all don't let nothing slide. I had completely forgotten that he had said that about that shot, because that series was all about Dame and Westbrook, right? I had totally forgotten that happened. Y'all remembered it and couldn't wait to throw it in this dude's face at the All-Star game. It's not even a real game.
Man, I mean, Anthony Simons, he should have kissed the rim. Like, why are you going to put a mouthpiece in,
face mask, something?
I mean, that's the only thing I heard. All that other nonsense, I just was thinking about this, like, you got to do it. I mean, come up with another dunk.
No, it's not enough that he's high enough to actually do it. You needed him to take a war wound for it.
No. I mean, you could have put on some sort of face shield, something. It just, to me, it feels like this is about showmanship. Like, if you're going to do that dunk, actually do that dunk, or do a different dunk that don't put your teeth in danger. I'm sorry.
It's all about setting expectations, because when we watched that, it looked like, oh, he wanted to kiss, then he backed out of it, when in fact, it was probably never his plan. Like, that dude probably practiced that 100 times, and not one of those 100 times did he actually kiss the rim. He should have, like he said, put like a little mask on the rim or something, so that going into it, we knew he was actually not going to try to make contact.
Here's what I know about this. Dominique Foxworth, cover cornerback, was not ever putting himself in a position to have his teeth knocked out, not even in no football game. And he thinks this dude's supposed to do it in a dunk contest.
Hey. Selfish. A, you're absolutely wrong. I can show you plenty of bad decisions that I made through the course of my career, because I was not Dominique Foxworth's first round draft pick cover corner. I was Dominique Foxworth, we need to make this roster. So I was sticking my teeth up in anything. I played safety for several weeks, like real life safety in the box. And for some reason, John Lynch was playing deep middle and I was in the box. It happened. Look it up.
Do you question if these locker assignments are fair?
All right, so we are going to the All-Star locker room, and Domantas Sabonis was on Team LeBron with Steph Curry, and their lockers were near one another. There's Steph Curry.
It's nice.
Spacious.
Oh, that's not a locker. Ooh. That's a shelf.
Where did they get that?
Wow. That really happened.
Yeah.
And by the way, since it's up here, I need to send a shout out to the homie Dragonfly Jones, who I was like, yo, why in the world do these look like old Pacers jerseys? And then he was like, the All-Star game was supposed to be in Indianapolis this year, which means that they were just like, look, we're going to have this game and we're going to wear the jerseys that we already got. The kids won't know no different.
Steph's locker is COVID friendly, right? He's got the spaces up. They're just telling Sabonis, we don't care. You're going to breathe in all that open locker room air. We're not protecting you.
Yo, it's not even his first All-Star game. Like, I was going to say he was getting hazed.
Mm-mm. There's a hierarchy to this, obviously. NBA is the most hierarchical league, because not only was there a bottom locker and a top locker, there's a medium locker. And they gave the Joker the medium locker.
Now, what this looks like is, it looks like in order to get Steph Curry to come, they negotiated this and he got the big locker. And they told Sabonis, you should be happy to be here.
Today at 3:05 p.m. Eastern, White Sox and Dodgers.
Look, man, I'm not saying that Trevor Bauer is not a good pitcher worth getting paid a whole lot of money. I'm just saying parlaying 73 innings against the worst division in baseball into the contract that he got, you, sir, are a ski mask all-star. Now watch this pitch we got right here. Struck him out.
Got him.
Now wait till you hear what Trevor Bauer said. Yeah, you see him pointing at his eye?
Oh, now it closes.
Yeah. One eye, which I have to say, sounds terribly unsafe for the batter. Here's Bauer talking about it after the game.
We noticed you were closing one of your eyes while you were pitching. For those who are new to seeing you pitch, can you explain what you were doing there?
Yeah, I figured if they can't score off me with one eye open, it's going to be difficult to score off me with two eyes open. So just having a little bit of fun.
That's disrespect. I just can't think of any other way to term that other than disrespect. And
it
impressive.
Is. Yeah, that's the part I'm leaning in on. Like, I don't care how people feel about Trevor Bauer. It seems kind of annoying, and maybe he's like filming his own reality show because he's holding his own camera, which doesn't make sense to me. But I appreciate bat flips, and people call that disrespectful. So why not answer the bat flip with the one eye closed? Like, maybe it messes with your depth perception and maybe you knock somebody out. But hey, we're here for a good time. Bust your teeth on the rim. Entertain me.
Made you intrigued.
I would be more intrigued if it was anyone but Trevor Bauer, a.k.a. the guy you get stuck to sitting next to him at a dinner party talks about Dogecoin the whole time. Like, I am not generally intrigued by his whole shtick, but I guess it's cool to do that.
All right, that's the show. Check out Mina Kimes NFL Live and on the Mina Kimes Show, a podcast she does with her dog, and Dominique Foxworth. Check him out at the Undefeated and all over morning television.